Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You are listening to Mist Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Mist Apex Podcast, brought to you by Mist Apex Mugs. Go buy a mug. Go to www.mistapexpodcast.com/buy stuff. This episode is called, Well, They've Done It Again. I'm your host, Matt Trumpets, and I'm joined from a motorhome in Cornwall by regular host, Spanners Ready. How you doing there, Spanners?
I'm good. I'm doing all the things I tell the guys on the panel not to do. I'm on a mobile connection. I've got seagulls in the background. Look, do as I say, not as I do. Sorry.
Yes, and that would be terrifying, Vettel. And speaking of Vettel, do you know who we are also joined by today? Bradley, Vettel smashing race of champions, thrashing honest to goodness race car driving superstar, international icon, and all-round nice guy, Philpott, has jumped in to fulfill the role of secondary host when your connection inevitably drops out.
Good evening, everyone, and thanks for finally using my proper intro.
You like that? It's a bit of a handful to get all the way through in one breath, but I mean, for a world champion beater,
I'm happy with that.
Hey, so it's not the typical beginning to a show, but I am glad that I've managed to get a setup to speak to you guys, because after all the negativity in Australia, I'm so happy now for the sport I love, for F1, that we've had such a positive race and such a positive weekend. And I've come to the conclusion, and I'm going to argue with the panel throughout the show at various points here, that there's nothing wrong with modern F1. F1 isn't broken. F1 does not need this huge panic and another knee-jerk reaction for overtaking. What F1 needs is modern tracks. Australia didn't deliver. Bahrain did. China delivers. Barcelona, Monaco, they don't. Look at Turkey. That delivered classic, fantastic races. So I'm starting to just feel a little bit defensive of my favorite sport, and I just want to bring it into the modern era.
So can I ask, are you the very same person who wanted to get to the actual race within 10 minutes of the start of the show?
Yes, boss. You do whatever you want, Trumpets. I'm going to mute now.
Well, I tell you what, how about we tell the audience at home we are an independent podcast hosted by MistApexPodcast.com. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We may be wrong, but we're first. And this show is safe for work. We are keeping it clean here so you can play this with the kids in the background or at work. But I tell you what, for the kind of race we just saw, I think we need some extra voices. So what say we bring on the rest of the panel? Anil, Formula E, Parmar, welcome back. How's it going?
It's going very well. And I'm still getting over how exciting that race was. Two for two for Ferrari. I'm delighted.
It was brilliant. And of course, the inestimable Alex Goldschmidt. Goldie, welcome back to the show with your new internet, your new job, and all of the excellent things.
Thanks, Trump. It's good to be back on the show here on Mist Apex.
Yeah, great to have you. And of course, hi to the live stream who are already, I'm hoping somebody's paying attention to it. Looks like they've already had about 9,000 comments, judging by what I see out the corner of my eye. And if you're looking for us, you can just go to MissedApexPodcast.com and find live stream, or go directly to YouTube and use the Googles as your friends. Folks, what say we get to the good stuff? So for me, it was a pretty interesting story coming into the weekend, because you had the questions of, could Mercedes keep its cool in traffic? You had the questions of, could McLaren build on their astonishing finish in Australia, to which we all kind of knew the answer was no. And most importantly, the question we were hoping to answer was, is Ferrari lucky, good, or both? So let's talk now about the setup for the race. We had two important factors. We had Hamilton's gearbox penalty, which, I don't know, was that a surprise to anybody else?
I was surprised. Mercedes is normally pretty bulletproof. And I heard that in the evening after it was announced, and I was pretty surprised by it.
What's interesting was them saying that they were actually lucky to finish in Australia. So that was an issue that was going on in the background that we weren't even aware of.
Hey, Anil, do you think that might explain why Hamilton just suddenly dialed it down to about zero with about 10 laps left to go?
Yep, that's exactly what I was going to suggest. But if my memory's correct, I think Hamilton's had a gearbox penalty every season under the hybrids. There just seems to be one, and it's weird that it happened right at the very beginning.
Yeah, well, maybe better at the beginning and the end. And what a nice tradition for Mercedes to have, right, Spanners?
Yes. But however, we had a query that Summers ended up answering for us. Now, we were discussing, why is it that you can have three engines and change them at any time at all, but with a gearbox, if you change it before it's completed six races, you get a penalty? But by the time Summers actually answered that in our WhatsApp group, I had completely switched off.
And he answered by basically saying it was a hangover from previous regulations, and it was just, that rule has just stayed on, hasn't it? Just to kind of keep things simple. But that's something that maybe would be good to look at, because it potentially robbed us of a Hamilton-Vettel fight right at the front.
It did, indeed. And it is an interesting thing, because you can even fix, I know according to the regulations, you can fix the actual gears. The dog rings and the gears are replaceable under the current regulations, but the rest of the gearbox is absolutely off limits. So anybody else for getting to actual qualifying at this point? Well, with that thunderous roar of approval, let's move on and talk about the events of qualifying to set the stage for the race. Pierre Gasly. Oh my goodness. Toro Rosso. Oh my goodness. Honda. I don't know about anybody else, but for me, that was the thing of qualifying. Barely anything else even happened.
Right. I'm a little bit reluctant to break the image that Bradley Philpott, you know, is this expert racer that we bring on here to tell you how to drive a motor vehicle. But for the last 6 months, he has done nothing but tell us how amazing McLaren are going to do. But here they are, Bradley, with Toro Rosso absolutely showing them the way.
So I think what the story here isn't how badly McLaren have done versus some of the expectations that some people might have had. It's more a story about how brilliantly Pierre Gasly's done. I was having a small discussion before the podcast with Goldschmidt about this, that there are some drivers that you see in the junior formula who completely dominate, and you think that guy, when he gets to Formula One, is going to be on par with anyone. Someone like Van Dorn. And you see other drivers who maybe do win the junior championships, or some of them, but they scrape to it and they don't dominate. Someone like Gasly. But then when they get to Formula One, they just take to it better. And he's taken very few races to find his feet and be completely comfortable. The guy looks super confident, and wow, yeah, I'm in awe of the job he did this weekend.
Because we keep saying, yeah, he's not a rookie, this is his second season, but how many actual races has he done? Something like seven?
This is his eighth.
Yeah, well, that's just incredible then. I mean, that really puts today in context. I mean, he is basically a flat-out rookie still.
Yeah, and we even thought that was going to be the major handicap for Toro Rosso. It was not even the Honda engine, which many think of as being a handicap, although maybe not so many after today. But just the sheer lack of experience of their two drivers. I mean, they ditched Sainz and they ditched Kvyat, who, if nothing else, could at least occasionally bring the points home. for two brand new drivers, but it looks like it's starting to pay off, at least for Gasly.
They kind of didn't ditch Sainz, but I take your point. And after Melbourne, where Honda had a problem and, you know, they didn't show stunning pace in the back of that Toro Rosso, I was fully expecting there to be the kind of ongoing Honda disaster show and poor Toro Rosso with, you know, good expectations of being a works team for the year. We're going to have problems, but this weekend is, well, for the moment anyway, put those fears to rest for me. The car got to the end of the race. It didn't miss a beat and it was fast.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see if this is a one-off because they weren't particularly strong in Australia, but Bahrain, long straights, China we're going to, long straights, Azerbaijan, it's got that gigantic straight. So I just wonder if they've just come up with like a very slippy car because they weren't particularly good in Australia.
Well, I hate to argue with Anil. I'm lying, the Ferrari-obsessed git. I love arguing with him, but they were quite strong in Australia until the race. I mean, they were good throughout all the practice sessions.
Okay, maybe you watch more practice than me then, because I think the unfortunate timing of those sessions at, what, 2 a.m, Spanners? You know, I need my lion.
Yeah, I've got kids. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, it's all over when you have kids. But their performance aside, that wasn't actually the only thing that happened. And I think probably the most amazing thing that happened was Verstappen was, well, Verstappened, apparently, by his own car.
It might seem just like he made up an excuse that he had this power surge of 150 horsepower. But I think I kind of believe him. I don't think the team would, you know, just allow him to save face by making something up. If he says he's gone away and looked at the data and seen this issue that caused him to suddenly spin the wheels on the exit of that second corner, I think that probably is the case. I don't know what you guys think.
To cast a shadow of doubt over that, he was looking really, really aggressive in that session anyway. And they said through practice, I heard people saying that they could see his back end coming out on that corner. So there is a slight suspicion that he might have been the master of his own destiny in some way. Whether there was an additional surge on top of that, obviously we're speculating.
The reason I would stand firm in believing him is that it was a really, you know, he didn't just have a small moment. He over-rotated massively. You know, he had a basically a half spin. It's quite a big mistake for someone who I would consider to be that good to make.
Yeah, well, he wasn't the first driver to go off there during the weekend. I recall someone going off in practice and having a trip through the gravel, potentially a Sauber. But for me, it was just another reminder of the driver's right foot not being what dictates how much horsepower there is, unlike if you go go-karting or just drive a road car. Software plays a huge role in it, which was just a bit of an untimely reminder. I don't like that about the current power units, but on the bright side, at least we hoped it was going to give us a more of an exciting race, because if you put someone like Max towards the back, hopefully we get some overtaking, but we'll come to that later on, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, it was kind of exciting, particularly given what was about to happen in the race the next day. But it was good news for Ferrari with Vettel getting the pole, but not every Kimi fan was happy, were they, Anil?
No, I saw many a conspiracy theory about this, quite dramatic ones as well. I did see, so Kimi came out and he had to overtake cars on his outlap, which the drivers were having to be very gentle on the tyres for because of overheating. And then he had traffic on his actual fast lap and he was very, as vocal as Kimi can be, I think is the way to say it, when he was interviewed by, I think it was a very excited Johnny Herbert on the grid. I thought he was going to take pole had he had a clean lap. And in the end, Vettel was the one that got the perfect lap in. Kimi just seemed, I'm not stoking the fire here, but he was clearly unhappy that he was the driver that didn't get given the proper kind of outlap preparation and had to overtake cars on his fast lap.
Yeah, and maybe rightfully so, because he had kind of looked faster all week, right, Brad?
Yeah, I'd agree with Anil. I don't think it was a conspiracy, but I do think that he wasn't very happy about his poor preparation lap, put it that way.
All right, then, on to the race. Who wants to start us off? Oh, wait, that's my job.
Wait, Matt. What? If I'm your co-host, isn't it up to me to tell you how the race was won and lost? Please say no. Please say no.
Can you actually see the notes there, Spanners?
No. And I was barely paying attention. No. Why don't you do it? You seem to do a good job every single race review.
Well, thank you very much for that kind comment. So really, once we factor in the two penalties, or not the penalties, but we factor in Verstappen P15 and Hamilton P9, it looks like a race of redemption. How far up the grid can Hamilton get? How much can he limit the damage? And the start was utterly critical for him. And I know if you were just looking at places, you think he had a terrible start, but that was not the case at all. He kind of rocketed up several places going into turn one, and that completely saved his bacon.
Yeah, and actually, yeah, he made a great start off the line, but he was stuck and actually had to brake behind Magnussen, who had also started well, but was pushing him to the right-hand side and was really, really fighting for that place. And obviously, we saw throughout the race how dogged Magnussen was and is in every single race. I'm starting to love that guy. And Hamilton had to sort of come back, and then he had to go right into the middle of the field. And then he went sort of quite cautious. And I think absolutely the right thing to do. We've seen Hamilton now have those cautious starts from the middle of the pack. He didn't always used to. So if you want Hamilton to do well, I think that you're happy that he just takes that time. Yes, he gives up a place or two, but then he's still in the fight. Whereas years ago, he might not have been.
When I was fully aware that I was going to be leaned on slightly more heavily than normal, not just talking about driving aspects of this race. So I was really trying to pay attention through the whole race. Probably the worst possible race for me to have had that responsibility, because there's so much to take in. But one of the voice notes I made at the start of the race was, dodgy first lap for Hamilton, a bit too cautious. And looking at the positions after the first lap, he didn't really seem to have gone anywhere, and obviously was duped into the hairpin by Alonso just diving down the inside. So initially I wasn't very impressed with Hamilton, but once it strung out a little bit and the field just spread out that bit more, he seemed to make easy work of most of the cars in front of him before he was up with his proper end of the grid.
I definitely have to agree with Brad there. The thing is, as Sven has said, that he has been impatient in past years, but this just shows that now he's a four-time world champion. He's got a lot of weight on his shoulders, especially being the team leader at Mercedes. So I think he's just looking, right, we're in the second race, got to get some points on the board no matter what happens.
Yeah, and that's the kind of mature thinking that you really expect from someone who's been in the sport as long as he has and as long as Vettel has. And to me, again, if you go back and watch, he made big progress down the front straight, and that's what kept him out of all the disaster behind him. Yeah, he did get hung up by what was happening ahead of him, but it kept him out of the worst of it and gave him a chance to get his tires and everything up to temperature, because he was starting on the harder set of tires. The other thing that happened at the beginning that was might have been a big deal, but actually wound up not being a big deal, was the fact that one Pierre Gasly actually managed to pass Ricciardo on the start before Daniel took the spot back. And I thought that was fantastic.
I actually didn't notice that, but I thought him and everyone else in that fight, because it really was a fight for almost every position through the field. Everyone seemed to manage to get through without too much damage. It wasn't too much of an issue in terms of banging wheels, although Magnussen seemed to rekindle his relationship with Hülkenberg and had some small moments. I don't know whether anyone else enjoyed their fights, but one thing I'd point out is that Haas is super strong. I know bits of Grosjean's fell off, but you know, they were being bashed into and fighting hard and always continuing.
Yeah, it's that Ferrari DNA coming to the fore. And in fact, it was Verstappen running the action. And his contact with Hamilton was also at the start very, very critical because he picked up a puncture from that, which we'll get to the whose fault was it later. But I'm curious whether or not you think it might have been a tad impetuous there, Brad, of Verstappen, not just to pass Hamilton, because he seemed to have the better of him, but to really try and run him directly off the track.
I know Spanners has got an opinion on this. I don't think it was impetuous of him to pass, but I thought it was definitely optimistic to expect Hamilton to have disappeared by the time he moved across.
And this shows that we're looking at two of the greatest racers in F1, assuming that Verstappen has the career we think he's going to have. Because how many times have we seen Lewis Hamilton hand people out to drive on the outside? How many times did Rosberg get out of the way of Lewis Hamilton saying, I am just going to occupy that track and do my normal exit, get out of my way, or we will crash? And Senna was applauded for doing that. Hamilton is seen as a bully boy for doing it. Verstappen, clearly willing to do the same thing. Now, what I've always wanted when Hamilton has done those moves is I've always wanted to say Rosberg to go, well, just hold your ground. Don't jump out of the way. Hold your ground. Punish him for that. And that is what Lewis Hamilton did. He was like, no, I'm not backing off. You have to leave me a car's width. If you want to put me in that situation, that's on you. So what we've seen is that, you know, the immovable object and the unstoppable object today clashing. And the result is flat tire.
I've wanted them to meet on track like that for so long. I definitely think Max probably should have given a bit more space. It definitely erred more towards his side. I remember this exact race in 2014 where Rosberg and Lewis fought. And there was just one moment where Rosberg had to kind of correct the car last minute to avoid puncturing Hamilton. And he came on the radio and said, you know, that's not on. And as Banner said, this is just these two meeting on track and they're not going to yield for each other. And I hope we see it more often throughout the year. Because, you know, Verstappen knows if he can get one up on Lewis, it's going to make him look very good, especially given that we all speak about him as being a future world champion, one of the best ever. So very much looking forward to that, although it was a shame that it ended up, I don't know what actually caused Max's retirement, but I'm guessing it was contributed to the puncture. It's a shame because it ruined what would have been a very good race for him right up there with Lewis.
Without wanting to resume my normal role of commenting purely on driving, the silly thing about that situation was part of being a top line race driver is also understanding who you're fighting against. You don't just have one blanket rule for, you know, in this racing situation, I'm going to put the car here. You also have to take into account who you're fighting. And Verstappen should have realized Hamilton isn't someone that you can bully. He's going to keep his nose in there a bit, you know, as much as he has a right to. Hamilton did start to back out, but Verstappen could have maintained that position without running him all the way to the edge. You saw later on in the race with Magnussen, when he tried to go up the inside of Grosjean into turn two, he was forced to back out and then obviously wasn't happy about it. And Grosjean was on the line that Verstappen would have been on had he given him a little bit of room. So Hamilton would have had to back out for turn two anyway. So it was kind of, I can't really put the blame anywhere other than at Max for his own problem.
I should say it bodes well that Verstappen was able to keep up with Lewis throughout the lap, despite the fact that Lewis was getting a tow from Alonso down the straight. Because in the past, we've seen the Red Bull unable to kind of cling on to a Mercedes. So I was quite surprised when I saw them coming out the last corner. I think, oh, Verstappen's way, way closer than I thought he would be. I don't know if that came to maybe Lewis not having the temperatures right up there, or potentially that the Red Bull chassis, in race trim at least, is a bit of a match for the faster cars out there as well, like Mercedes and Ferrari.
Okay. The next thing that happened, and this was also critical and might very well have helped Verstappen tremendously, was that a virtual safety car was actually called for Ricciardo. And this was important not only because it might have been a time saver for him, but also because it kept the gaps from getting farther apart for several laps in a row.
It did. But he could have really done with a full safety car, couldn't he? Ultimately, it came to nothing because Verstappen was parked up at the side of the track a couple of laps later. And like Anil, I've got no idea what the actual cause was. It didn't really look like he had suspension damage. The car came off pretty unscathed, considering how much damage a puncture would normally do to the car, having to drive a whole lap. But yeah, the field wasn't bunched up, obviously, with it being a virtual safety car. But in all, a weekend to forget for Red Bull. And we've been talking quite a lot about how there's at least one extra team that's going to be in the fight for the wins. But Red Bull haven't given us anything yet, have they? You know, it was Ricciardo was quite strong at the end of Melbourne, but the cars weren't up at the front and they were helped by the safety car there. And at Bahrain, they basically, apart from showing some good pace, they've not actually come through with the goods. We need Red Bull to start getting in the mix as well to give us another element. Not that we needed it in this particular race.
Imagine when they do start turning up and when they do start getting in the mix, we've already got such a fascinating battle up front. If you just add another two cars into that, we could actually, from all the negativity we've had all week, we could end up with one of the classic F1 seasons. And there's so much to be optimistic about.
Yeah, my favorite F1 season was 2010, where you had McLaren, Ferrari and Red Bull all going at it. And even if this year, even if the third fastest team is one of those and they're a few temps off, it doesn't matter because they'll influence strategy by having a place on the racetrack and being hard to overtake. And that's why, hopefully, again, next week in China, we're going to have another thriller.
If you were Verstappen or Ricciardo, you'd have come into the season knowing you've got a Renault engine, but really also knowing you've got a very strong car probably underneath you with loads of optimism and thinking, I've got an outside shot at the championship here if we can develop well and we can finish well. But they've just thrown away so many points already. I thought of poor Ricciardo when his car just switched off. You know, what a rubbish problem to have. It just literally turned off going into the hairpin. He must be thinking, well, you know, we're two races in, but that's it, really. I've got no shot at the championship now already.
But you've also got to say, you know, Verstappen, who is clearly an amazing driver, he threw away points in Australia. Well, we had that spin and clearly was a bit frustrated driving erratically. Today he has that incident with Lewis. He's not necessarily going to come under pressure because we know how good he is and they love him there. They don't want him to leave. He's got a contract. But I know he's young. He can't just start getting involved in incidents. There's no excuse for that. You know, I remember Lewis when he first came into F1 had a few of those and he was slammed for it. And I hope the same thing will happen to Max because it's clumsy.
Yeah, I mean, coming back to the electrical issue with Ricciardo, I mean, whether the two items, obviously with Verstappen's horsepower overload and qualifying, whether in some ways there's probably a system glitch, either through the wiring harness or, as Anil alluded to earlier, the software maybe. So that's quite a dramatic double retirement for both Red Bull guys. But yeah, I mean, Bradley's point about Max's impetuousness getting in there, I think, was spot on.
So, Matt, obviously, we sort of have gone away a bit from the strategy. And, I mean, wow, this is the first time in ages where we've seen the strategy start to play the same kind of role it did in, like, 2014, 2015. It's gone away for the last couple of years. But this time, there was genuine intrigue and there was an option to do something different. It wasn't just a bolted-on one stop and, you know, we actually had like a team come out and fake a pit stop, force Ferrari to come in. And it was genuine strategy that kept me on the seat of my pants. And I'm just so happy to see the return of that. And first, you know, what was that down to? Are the tyres fundamentally different this year that's allowed that? So do Pirelli deserve like a bit of credit for doing this?
Well, it's definitely the tires played a huge role. In fact, I think probably if we got Brad going, he would tell you that the tires were everything in this race. And what was absolutely critical to that was Hamilton and his remarkable three wide pass on the restart from the safety car, because he kept his tires up to temperature and was able to take advantage of all three of those drivers, put himself in P6, and he was only, I think, about 10 seconds down the road. And at this point, the options for Mercedes opened up because you had Hamilton on softs that could definitely run a one-stop. You had Bottas at the front that could now freely two-stop and attack Vettel and go for the undercut. And now Ferrari was suddenly in a strategy bind because with Hamilton having cleared the traffic and the virtual safety car setting him up for that, now they were going to be forced to play defense to try and keep Mercedes from getting ahead, because if Ferrari had two stopped, the second stop would have put them behind Lewis.
Yeah, this was one of the few examples I can think of where the three tire compound rule actually worked incredibly well. And I think Pirelli deserved credit as well, because I saw pre-season that they'd come up with a new software that allowed them to I kind of predict strategies a bit better and vary up, but it did seem that the qualifying tire wasn't a great race tire. So we need to see more of that throughout the season.
So something that surprised me, I don't know whether it surprised everyone else, was that we had the medium tire being used. Now, I thought this was supposed to just be a tire that was left in the garage and wasn't really bolted on the cars during the races, but Mercedes put it on and it seemed to be working really well. And what that meant for us is that then caused strategy, which meant we didn't actually know what was going to happen until at the end. We had this awesome kind of perfect storm of lots of battles occurring throughout the field, but this slow burner going on at the front of the field where we were just left waiting to find out what are they going to do.
It was very much a case of cat and mouse. I mean, I didn't know what the heck was going on the best of times. But yeah, it just to see people go on two stop, one stop strategies, it was just like waiting to see what was going to happen.
And as soon as though, Matt, as soon as Vettel decided to do a one stop, because the two stop, I thought that was the way he was going to go. He was going to come out maybe behind Hamilton, but he would be on a softer tire that would definitely get him to the end. I thought that's the way he'd go. When they came out and they said, oh no, plan Z, or whatever it is that they finally got into, I think it was plan D, and said, right, we're going to go to the end of the race. You looked at the lap count and you went, well, obviously not. He's boned there. There's no way he's going to make it to the end. And he did make a big drama at the end. Oh my God, yeah. Like my tires were like totally like shot, and I didn't think I was going to make it, but I did. I don't quite buy that. Clearly he's done an amazing job. Clearly Ferrari have done an amazing job, but I don't buy the bit about that he's somehow done a miracle to make tires that weren't meant to last till the end of the race. What I think is that somehow those tires, either the combination of those tires on Ferrari or those tires not being as soft and cliffy as we think they are, meant that that was a viable strategy. It's just that we didn't know it. Ferrari knew it. We didn't know it.
I don't think anybody knew it. The longest recommended stint on those tires was 30 laps. And 30 laps, he hit 30 laps right at lap 50. And you'll notice that's right when Bottas picked up the pace. And they were expecting those tires to really go. Now, I'm going to chuck it to Brad in a second and get his opinion. But for me, you could see Ferrari starting to visibly lose traction those last seven laps. And yeah, maybe up to that point, it was not such a big deal. But decidedly, I think from that point on, he was driving on ice.
I was extremely surprised to see Vettel make it to the end still in first position on those tires. I agree with Spanners. When you saw the lap count, you just thought that, well, there's no way. This is now going to be a race at the end when the Ferraris have got fresh tires on. But a thought just popped into my head, and it may have been covered by people who are more intelligent than me in the post-race that I didn't actually see. But if Mercedes had kept Bottas on a two-stop, if they hadn't been so confident that Ferrari would definitely have to stop again, do you think that they could have won? Do you think that would have then put Hamilton in the zone where, because Bottas had two stopped, Vettel would then have had to cover him and Hamilton would have actually got track position at the end?
I don't actually know the answer to the question, but that would have been the move. That would have been the move, I think, to two-stop Bottas and let him come with fresh tires and try and chase down Hamilton and Vettel. And then they would have had to have a choice. And you were very astute to pinpoint that as a turning point in the race. Once Mercedes chucked both of their cars onto a one-stop strategy, they lost the advantage they gained with Raikkonen's disastrous pit stop.
Yeah, because it looked to me like the reason it was such a no-brainer for them. It was so obvious to them that Vettel's going to have to stop again. And we're good on the mediums, so we can be fast even on this harder compound. It just really looked to me like they were sure, as I was sure, that Mercedes, that they would then be able to just, you know, jump Vettel in the stops and they'd have good enough pace and track position to maintain the position.
Yeah, I feel that's the reason why Ferrari actually brought Kimi in for that pit stop on the super softs, because it would have forced Mercedes to think about bringing in Bottas to cover a possible undercut. Because I think Kimi was about 2.5-3 seconds behind at that point. So it would have just, and then they could have just let Seb run, but got him to really control the pace. I have to admit, I thought the race was completely over when I saw Bottas's pace on the mediums. And it does seem to suit the narrative of on the harder tires, when Bottas was on the medium, Seb was on the soft, and Bottas was closing in on him by about 0.5 second a lap. And at that point, I did think, oh, Ferrari have, they've just shot themselves in the foot. I did not expect that. And especially when Kimi had his issue, it did look as though the race for me was going to be Valtteri's. I kind of agree with Spanners in that I don't think Seb's kind of performed a miracle. And I think it was more just the suspense that no one knew. And actually, this goes back to the fact that practice in Bahrain, because it's so hot in practice one and practice three, the data that the teams get isn't as important. So they don't know it as well. So it really added to the spectacle, I thought.
Yeah, and it really was a spectacle. I think the takeaway is that strategy group that they had before this race, it needs to just calm down, watch this race, understand what worked, where they were, Matt, and just go, okay, let's not panic. Let's not get angry with each other. There are some really, really good things we've got here if we're careful.
Yeah, well, that's very much the baby in the bathwater argument. And it's not a bad one. But it's also clear if they're going to stick to some of their traditional street circuit tracks, that you're going to continue to have some of the same issues that we saw in Australia, where I think there were maybe 5 overtakes at best. But to me, the lingering question of the race, of which there are 2, one is, did Mercedes just wait a little too long to ask Bottas to have a go at Vettel? Given Vettel himself said his tires went off 10 laps from the end, not 7 laps from the end.
And Mercedes certainly seemed to think that, didn't they? When you listen to some of their post-race reaction, I did see a short interview with Toto Wolff, and it seemed to me that they could have asked them to push a little earlier.
For me, unfortunately, I just think it comes down to the wrong Mercedes driver was in the position to take advantage. Bottas is clearly a good driver. It's not happening for him at the moment. And it goes down in my books as a fail for Valtteri Bottas. Now, we will put this to Bradley and ask him to put his driver hat on. In my uneducated viewpoint, he either A, with his final attempt where he dived down the inside, he either bottled that or he should not have made it and waited to fight on the next straight. I'd really be curious, Brad, which one you think is true.
Okay, so with the caveat that I haven't seen any other angles other than the initial one we all saw on TV, and I'm sure it was analysed on the Sky Pad and that kind of thing after the race. From what I've seen, it looked to me like he should have just released the brakes at the end and gone for a lunge. You know, scare Vettel make the decision. You know, turn in and you're going to have a crash, or open the steering and at least be side by side going through turn one. That first corner, if you watch any of the Formula 2 races, there are constant late moves. At the end of the feature race in Formula 2 this weekend, Artem Markelov passed Sergio Sete Camara into that first corner. And then Camara repassed him before the corner in the braking zone. It can be done. And because the track's so wide there and it's such a slow apex, you can get away with these super lunges. And it did look to me like Bottas bottled it a bit. He should have just gone for it. Or, as you suggested, if he didn't think he was close enough and he wasn't comfortable making that do or die lunge, he should have just waited and then tried to go maybe around the outside of turn 3. He made the wrong decision. And I have to agree with you, not just the wrong Mercedes driver. There are plenty of other drivers on the grid who would have made that move stick. Ricciardo came from so far back at Melbourne for some of his overtakes. And obviously it can be done at other tracks. Other drivers would have gone for it. And it bugs me that Bottas went for the easy option and didn't try and make it stick. Maybe he just didn't want to risk a DNF after, you know, not having a great first race, but it's those kind of moments that define a driver. And Verstappen would have gone for it. I'm pretty sure Hamilton would have gone for it. He should have.
And do you mean the very same Ricciardo that has yet to sign a contract with Red Bull? That one?
Yeah, that one. And I think, well, Bottas hasn't staked his claim for that drive well enough yet.
I'm astonished Bottas didn't win that race. And not just because of what happened at turn one on the final lap, but he should have just set Seb up for turn 4. And we see it so often. The circuit is perfectly designed for overtaking going into turn 4. And you could kind of tell from his reaction afterwards, I think he thought he should have won it. He had that terrible qualifying session in Australia. He's under pressure. He actually, apart from that, he had a really good weekend. But I should also say, I see some people kind of criticising Hamilton at times, saying, oh, he's complaining on the radio. I wonder how much Valtteri during the race was saying to his team, like, how much do I need to push? Because there was this massive phase of about 15 laps where he just wasn't anywhere close to matching Seb's pace, or he wasn't closing in on him. And then he only seemed to come alive at the end. And if I was Valtteri, I would have been thinking, I want to win this race. Just tell me what I need to do and tell me the lap times, because he should have closed in on Vettel before the final couple of laps.
In Valtteri's defense, to just kind of switch around to defending him, he was on those mediums for quite a long time, wasn't he? And Vettel's tyres were gone by the end. I know Bottas is on a harder compound, but he'd been on them for quite a number of laps. And he also, you know, you could see him locking up quite frequently. He was struggling to not run out of tyre as well. So in his defence, he'd probably managed them almost as well as he could. I don't think he had a lot. If he had pushed early, you never really know. Maybe he would have fallen away at the end. Maybe he was just doing exactly what Mercedes told him to, and maybe he isn't on the. We never really hear him on the radio. We hear Hamilton a lot, and that could be a sign that Hamilton's obviously just really proactive and really just trying to get every bit of information for every advantage he can. Maybe Bottas is just a bit more willing to sit back and do what the team told him to do.
Yeah, but you're stating facts now, and if America has taught us anything, it's that more important than facts is optics. It's how it looked, and this makes me fear that Valtteri Bottas's career is in real, real trouble now. I always thought it would be optimistic for him to hang on to the Mercedes seat for next season. But when you have a big do or die moment there, the real kind of clip pressure, he hasn't managed to do it for whatever reason. He didn't make up the gap until quite late for whatever reason. But it looks like he didn't make the pace up quickly enough. And then when he had the chance, he didn't take it. Now, when you've got a comparison of Lewis Hamilton, where you've got to think, well, if Lewis Hamilton had started fourth instead of ninth, I mean, where on earth would he be? Unfortunately for Valtteri Bottas, he has nowhere to hide, because whenever he puts in lap times or has race pace, he has got Lewis Hamilton as a direct comparison. And the optics look really, really bad for his career going forward.
And you know what else it says to me? If I'm fighting Bottas, it's unlikely to happen. If I was one of the drivers fighting Bottas, I would now have one extra little bit of information in my mental armory, which is that he's not going to do it. I don't need to defend this corner, because with this gap, the gap he's got behind me, he's not going to make this move, or he's going to do a half-hearted attempt. So even if I see him maybe coming in the mirrors, I'm not even going to move across. And that's something that all of his competitors will have against him. So it's not just the public perception that that he's damaged by. It's his competitors he has to fight against every other week as well.
Yeah, we should point out this was a race where both Red Bulls failed to finish. Raikkonen retired. Hamilton had a gearbox penalty. Seb was on a compromise.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
After Adrian Valtteri finished P2, there was a quote before the race from Toto Wolff I saw on Sky. And I think Johnny Herbert said, oh, Valtteri looks quick this weekend. And he just said, yeah, when the tarmac is like this and it's very smooth, he seems to be able to be as quick as Lewis. And I thought that was a very interesting quote, because it was basically like, you know, there are certain races this year or of the year where Valtteri seems to not even be better than Lewis. He literally just said, oh, you can match him there. And hypothetically, in a hypothetical situation, if Hamilton was to say, I'm retiring at the end of the year, would Mercedes-Benz want Valtteri to be that number one driver? Because it's just another example where he just hasn't been able to show.
Yeah, I'd have to say that's 100%. That's got to be a no. 100% no. No top team is going to be looking at him as a number one driver. And that's not a nice thing to say at all. And it must be really, really hard for him as somebody who's come through being considered very, very good and somebody who was very, very good against Massa, who nearly won a world championship, and then to suddenly be spoken about in these terms must be incredibly frustrating. I do find myself cheering him on and hoping he's going to do well. Matt, I'm running out of the goodwill of my family that's letting me podcast while I'm in a motorhome in Cornwall. Are we going to get to whose fault is this? Because I would like to establish some blame before I go back to my family and everything being my fault.
Yeah, of course we can get to whose fault is it anyway. Let's go there right now. Oh, dear.
That soundboard is a disaster.
Oh,
whose
dear.
Fault is this?
I don't have a whose fault is this anyway soundboard to hit. That's the best I can do. But let's get to it. Whose fault is it anyway? Let's start with the very, very beginning, Verstappen and Hamilton. Whose fault was it? Spanners, you tell us.
It's just Verstappen. He's in a completely different place in his career. He was in a different place in his race to Lewis Hamilton. I actually think that Lewis could have been a little bit more conservative. Keeping your nose in to a guy who's racing from 14th with nothing to lose, you've got to put a little bit of blame on Lewis Hamilton there. I think Lewis should have avoided the contact.
So which is it? You just said Verstappen and Hamilton.
Well, no, like, okay, tell you what. Like, overall, it's Verstappen. He was too aggressive there, and he's not accounted for a car on his left-hand side. But as a Hamilton fan, I blame Lewis Hamilton for not just backing out of it, because that could have been a lot worse.
Okay, in my opinion, I'm going to lay all the blame with Verstappen. He'd won the corner, didn't need to push it as hard as he did. Having said that, it was marginal, so it almost wasn't even an issue. I don't think Hamilton's got any blame in that at all.
Yeah, I completely agree with what's been said. Max should have been a bit more cautious. There's no need for him to do that. Especially, he'd made such good progress. He should have just got on with it. He had Alonso up ahead. He would have cleared him pretty quickly.
Yeah, definitely Verstappen. You know, as Brad says, he should have actually given him a bit more room. And we know that Verstappen will go for the overtake if there is a smaller gap going down. So yeah, definitely Max's fault.
Well, I'm going to be a bit controversial here then. And say that although, yeah, on balance, I think it was mostly a situation of Max's making. If we're talking about Hamilton and mature thinking, not leaving his nose, unless he had no choice at all, not leaving his nose hanging out there would have been the better choice in that corner.
I don't think he did leave his nose out there, though. I think he had he had an expectation that Verstappen would leave him a little bit of room. You know, he wasn't expecting the whole track, but I thought Hamilton had the right to, you know, to be left a bit of room. And when he saw that wasn't happening, he did try and back out, which is why his front leading edge of the front wing just touched Verstappen's rear tire. If Hamilton had actually left his nose in, it would have been much more of a Hartley Perez kind of spin around from the start of the race, where the car in front gets kind of bumped around and spun. So I think Hamilton did attempt to back out. You know, I think he did it just right.
I'm just wondering, though, if he is not just a little bit impressed with Max Verstappen, and therefore he's had kind of, you know, Alonso's going by. Okay, I can let that go. Magnussen's pushing me to the right. Okay, I can let that go. I can let all these battles go. Hülkenberg, I just think about the end game. Verstappen, whoa, no, 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 son. Who do you think you are? You're not having this place. I think there might be a bit of psychology going on there. Something to track for the rest of the season.
I totally agree with you, except he didn't really do that in this situation. He'd have been further alongside. If that was his mentality in this situation, they would have still been a bit side by side. But I completely agree with you. I think he does see something special in Verstappen.
Go ahead.
So I was going to say, I can't wait to see them go head to head again, because Max rolled up Kimi already. He's done the same to Seb. He hasn't raced, and he did the same to Rosberg actually, but he's never really raced Lewis much. So I hope there's more to come, because Max has, I'm sure he respects him, but he doesn't care who he is. He wants to just beat Lewis. He wants to beat everyone. And he wants everyone to treat him on. He wants to treat everyone on track in the same way, and he's not going to budge. A bit like Schumacher when he first arrived, and how he was with Senna. I don't know if you guys caught it, but Lewis said something quite naughty about Max in the cool down room, which was one of the funniest things I've ever heard a driver say.
I was walking out the front door, and something was said, and I didn't really. I heard them apologize. Tell me what was said.
But substitute
it can't bad be said.
For with a really nice word like snowball.
Okay, so a replay was being shown and he just went, "What a snowball." And as he said it, Vettel just turned around and looked at the camera. It was perfectly scripted. And drivers get criticized for not showing enough personality. That is exactly what I want to see from Formula One drivers. So, you know, I hope they touch walls in China.
Well, let's hope so. You mentioned Magnussen and Hülkenberg there, Spanners. Who was at fault there? I actually didn't see that one. So did you catch a glimpse of it at the beginning, or is this one of these we should just leave out?
I think we should just leave this one out. And I am also going to have to duck out as well, because obviously I'm far away and I answer to a higher power. I just wanted to say a big thank you to you, Matt. When I realized I couldn't do the show, I was panicking, and you have gone to massive strides to, for the first time, run a Missed Apex proper live stream with five people on here. Just appreciate your effort. And it's nice to know that my goose, because I'm totally like maverick in this equation, that my goose has got my back for this. I hope you have a great show, guys. And I just want to leave you by saying that, you know, even though the result is like a dagger in my black heart, F1 was a real winner today. And I cannot tell you just how buzzed and excited me and my boy were watching this race on my phone. We were gripped from start to finish. When people do down Formula One, you just need to shove this race in their face and say, this is the greatest sport on earth. Good night.
See you, Spanners. Thanks.
Bye,
for
Spanners.
Checking in.
Okay, so now Spanners is gone. We can take full control, Matt. So
yes.
Here's the opportunity to do the
There is rebellion in the ranks.
The extended, whose fault is it? Okay, but a quick fire version. So I know we just said we wouldn't do it.
No, go right
ahead. Magnussen, Hülkenberg, right at the start, turn two. Whose fault is it? Really quick. Don't even need to give a reason.
Mag.
Yep, no.
Goldschmidt.
Mag.
And Trumpets.
I didn't see it, but I'm automatically going to be on Magnussen's side because he drives for Haas.
Okay, so I didn't really see exactly what happened. No detailed on boards, but so I'm not quite sure, but probably Hülkenberg. Okay, next corner, we had the Force India being nerfed around by Hartley. Whose fault was that?
I think it was Perez's, because he actually turned in. He might have been ahead at the corner, but Brendan did actually have the inside line. But Sergio just thought, you know what, I'm going to have a bit of the outside action. And yeah, I think he just turned in a bit too far. He could have just actually kept it side by side through that corner. So I think it's Sergio's.
Anil?
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Who got the penalty?
Hartley.
He got a 10-second penalty as a result.
Okay, so technically, I would say Hartley's caused the collision, but Perez should have, given how wide the apex of that corner is and all the runoff on the exit, I don't know why Perez took such a tight line on that early in the race. It was a bit nonsensical to me.
I think he might not have expected Hartley to be there. After all, he was a Toro Rosso with a Honda engine in it.
And I didn't really see anything other than the initial replay. It kind of looked to me like it was Hartley's fault, so I think I'll side with the officials on that one. I've got another one for you. How about Magnussen and Gasly? Was it at the restart when Gasly was a little bit caught napping at the end of the back straight?
Yeah, that was very tasty. And that's where Magnussen went off onto the runoff, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
I think Gasly did exactly what he had to do, squeeze him off.
And I actually think that was a really good example of another good example of Gasly being kind of super mature, looking like a Formula One driver who's been around for a few years.
Yeah.
He wasn't fazed by that at all.
When you consider the fact that he raced with the Honda unit in Super Formula last year. Now he's already got Honda experience, but in a completely different category. And it's quite fast paced in Super Formula. So what Pierre did last year, as Van Dorn did, because he went into Super Formula before he came into Formula One. And I think Gasly's just done a better job of it. So Gasly, I think, you know, has just shown his mettle this weekend.
I have one more. Whose fault is it? Before I let the show get back to
you have seized control the moment Spanners left, but this is actually okay. So whose fault was what?
And this is an incident we haven't really covered. And this is, well, I don't know whether it's obvious whose fault it is, but the Ferrari pit lane incident with Raikkonen injuring one of his crew.
Ooh, you know, I actually had a very real thought about this, but my problem is I haven't had time to do any research on the pit lane release systems that Ferrari and the other teams use.
Can I tell you what I think happened, just as like a factual breakdown?
Yeah, you can. And then I have one more. Whose fault is it for you?
Okay. Okay. I think what happened is they obviously have this automated system, as I think most of the teams do, where at some point, when all the wheels are deemed to be reattached to the car, a light goes green, the driver is trained to just respond to the light. And there may or may not be a human override that can stop the light going green. And in this instance, you know, I was watching the pit stop and I could see clearly, I was about to send a message on our WhatsApp group saying, oh, slow pit stop for Raikkonen, because I could see that the left rear hadn't come off yet. But for some reason, the moment all three other wheels were back on the car, the light went green and Raikkonen did what he's trained to do, which is leave. And obviously the left rear tire wasn't attached. It was attached. It hadn't even come off yet.
And that was the problem.
And is it a case then with this Ferrari system that after the car is stationary and some of the wheels have been taken off, or after maybe a half a second period, a time period that they deem is a normal wheels coming off time, from that point onwards, when the system sees all four wheels are back on, it then goes green? Because that seems like a massive oversight if that is the case. You know, I'm no design engineer for pit stop equipment, but I'm sure I would pick that out pretty quickly as a potential safety issue.
Yeah, well, and you would. And I had the exact same thought, that the fundamental failure here was that mechanically all four wheels were attached, but problematically one of them had never come off. So the system clearly doesn't measure wheels coming off, or the person on the override switch, which I'm sure they would in fact have an override switch in case something went wrong with the sensors. The person looking at the override switch just saw four wheels attached and hit the button because he knew how important that pit stop was. And either way, you fundamentally have what I think amounts to a fairly interesting and clearly very serious, given the nature of the injury to the mechanic, safety problem. And one that unlike the Halo, the FIA seems to be perfectly happy to say, well, this is your problem and we'll just fine you if you make any mistakes. And I'm just curious if anybody else, and Goldie, I'll go to you first, if anybody else is suddenly thinking that, well, you know, maybe the FIA should have a sort of system-wide look at how to make these pit stops safer, because we've seen a number of unsafe releases already in this season.
I think it also boils down to the fact that why not have a uniform system that all the teams should employ, and there should be research done into this, because this is not going to be the first accident that this will happen in the pits this year. I can guarantee you that. And also, one of the biggest contingency factors is the fact that the guy on the left rear wheel putting the wheel on, you know, that wheel might, the guy that probably has hit the button to say, go, Kimi, go, and they've gone, oh dear, and the mechanic has now got a broken tibia and fibula as a result of that incident. So first of all, health and safety has to come as a priority. We don't want this happening again in the pits. So why don't the FIA, through the strategy group, say, okay, let's look at a uniform system where we can make sure that all the teams are using it, so thereby it eliminates costs for the teams. It also an increased cost for the teams, but also means that everyone uses the same mandatory system that works with the Halo.
Right. It's quite interesting that you mentioned the Halo, because as you both said, the FIA spent a lot of money and time, and with the Halo got some criticism for it. Let's also remember that in Formula E there was a minimum pit stop time because they didn't want it to be too dangerous when a driver switched cars. So you would often have pit stops and then a driver would just sit and wait for 6-7 seconds to meet that time. I would definitely support some kind of uniform system that all the teams have to use. It's strange that it's kind of gone on this long until something like this has happened. I recall a quite a dangerous pit stop about 5 years ago where Mark Webber's tire came off and it hit like a cameraman or someone in the pit lane, and they got quite seriously injured. I can't remember what came about from that. I know they just seem to give more stricter penalties if someone's tire came off. But at the end of the day, if you're out the race, you don't really care about getting fined, and you don't care about getting a potential drive through because you've been eliminated. So it seems like they just need to come up with a better solution, because as Alex said, this will happen again this year.
Yeah, well, I think the initial reaction to that was to limit pit lane access pretty severely. And it may be that they made cameramen wear helmets for a while if they were outside, if they were in the actual pit lane foaming.
My view is that I want pit stops to still be a performance differentiator. The problem with the minimum pit stop times that Formula E had and has now obviously gotten rid of is that it doesn't really matter how good your stop is because everyone's going to be in the pits at the same time. In fact, the skill with Formula E was judging the total pit stop time to make sure you didn't stay in too long. But obviously there was plenty of time to get all the mechanical tasks done. In fact, they don't even have any, did they? It was just strapping a driver in. And in Formula One, I think a minimum pit stop time would just, well, it would mean that pit stops weren't part of the performance differentiator between the teams. But there must be a balance. There's got to be a way that it does seem like they're trying to push it to the point where there isn't time for humans to check if stuff is actually done up. You know, you obviously saw with the Haas problems at Melbourne and this, I mean, in any normal situation, there would be like a final check before the driver leaves. Certainly in my own racing, I would wait until the crew chief who is looking at all the wheels, waiting for all the mechanics to say, yes, very clearly, I wouldn't go until that person has double checked. I know it's not as time pressured as Formula One, but there's got to be a slightly better balance. That's all I think.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I wouldn't support some kind of minimum time because it takes away from the excitement. Like, I always get nervous when the driver I want to win comes into the pits because you're just hoping that it goes right and then they leave and it's like, is the tire on? David Coulthard in commentary today for Channel 4, when the Haas made, I think it was Magnussen, made his first pit stop, you could see he was holding his breath. It was like, is the tire going to stay on? You know, it is part of the excitement, but it just needs to be done. There's just got to be a better solution than an electronic light in this case, which is basically said it's all sorted. And of course, it affects the driver because Kimi didn't do anything wrong. He just waited for the sign to go and it's told him to go and it's ended his race.
So in summary, whose fault is it?
We don't actually have the information to know that. So we're going to go with your other nickname, Bradley. It depends.
Okay, well, I'm going to say, based on the information that I have, it is Ferrari's pit system's fault. So if they had a system which took into account this situation, no one would have got run over. So what was your last, Matt? You said you have one more. Whose fault is it? What is it?
Grosjean and Magnussen.
Ooh. Yeah, okay. I have an opinion on this.
Let's hear it.
Okay, Grosjean was not in the same race as Magnussen today, was he? Magnussen had a better weekend than Grosjean. And the team, for whatever reason, weren't clear enough to Grosjean that he needed to not fight Magnussen. He was in a crucial part of the race where he was, you know, he was chasing down the Force India. He wanted to pass him. And maybe it wasn't Grosjean's fault. Maybe he wasn't aware, or maybe he was aware and he was being belligerent. But for whatever reason, Magnussen was unnecessarily held up by someone who he wasn't actually fighting. And, you know, teammates who are fighting for the same piece of track, you know, in the same part of the race, by all means fight. But in that situation, Grosjean should have been told firmly to not fight him. Because it looked, from the outside view, it looked like Magnussen had that place won and Grosjean just needed a small lift. And that wasn't what happened.
I mean, they were pretty much side by side. So I don't know why Grosjean fought it. Definitely his fault. It just cements my absolute love of Magnussen. Just his radio messages afterwards were absolutely hilarious. There was that scene from practice where the camera was on Magnussen and his mechanic. So he just kind of hit his mechanic where it hurts, if you know what I mean. And it's just great. He's become this a bit of the bad boy of F1. If he was in the best car, I wouldn't put money on him to win the championship. But I love watching him.
Yeah, I completely agree with both Anil and Bradley on this. Trumpets just was unnecessary for Grosjean to get involved. Didn't need to be there. Just let K-Mag go by and for them both to run their own race. Completely unnecessary.
Right. Well, you have disappointed me entirely by agreeing. So I didn't have the opportunity to bring my killer piece of evidence to the fore, which is that regardless of what you think they might have originally told Grosjean, like we could give him that very first, oh, here's Magnussen and what happened. The fact of the matter is the problem was solved when Gunther Steiner called for him to be pitted, which suggests to me that at the end of the day, it was a Rogro not exactly wanting to yield anything to a teammate to whom he thinks he is the leader, which I got to go with Anil on this. I just, the more I watch K-Mag drive this way, the more entertaining it becomes. And so I hope he continues to be, to have the speed advantage over Grosjean for at least the first part of the season, because the sparks are thoroughly, thoroughly entertaining. And wow, are we running long? Why, yes. Yes, we are running long. Let's jump on to the any other business section. Does anyone have any other business they want to bring up? Anil, you immediately are looking like yes.
As a big fan of a certain Fernando Alonso, I watch his race with quite a lot of interest. And I'm sure that when he goes to bed tonight, he's going to just see like a yellow Renault, because he spent the whole race staring at the rear end of Hülkenberg's car. There was a really interesting battle going on between, let me just make sure I get this correct. It was Alonso, Hülkenberg, and then the Haas of Magnussen. So three drivers, three different teams. They all ran completely different tyre strategies. And actually, Alonso was the one who he pitted first out of the group early on, but put on the mediums. And I think Toto Wolff said at the end of the race in an interview I saw that actually they saw his pace and realised that actually the mediums were a very good race tyre. And yes, there might be quite a lot of field spreads between the top three and the middle three or four teams. But it was really great to watch because Alonso, Magnussen and Hülkenberg were within 5 or 6 seconds for the entire race. And I hope we see more of that going forward.
I agree. That's a great piece of any other business, because that provided a lot of the entertainment, you know, a lot of the filler entertainment during the race that quite often we don't have. Sometimes we're looking at, you know, the battle for the win. And we don't really watch what's going on in the midfield, but it was hard to not watch today. There were lots of these battles. And one of the notes I made during the race was all the way through the field, that whole midfield group are so close that cars that are maybe a little bit quicker, like the Haas, maybe, or well, even today, the Toro Rosso, were quick enough that they should have been further up, both of them. They couldn't really make progress. Grosjean didn't really go anywhere through the race. They didn't move up very quickly because everyone's at this same kind of pace. Everyone's separated by, you know, a tenth here or there. So, yeah, in terms of any other business, there's just so much to talk about, isn't there? There were lots of fights. I know we've already mentioned Gasly and what a great job he did. Alonso with his great audacious move on Hamilton near the start and then taking the fight to Renault. People like Van Dorn being maybe a little disappointing, not making the same progress as his teammate, although was there or thereabouts. And one other real big one, what does everyone think about Ericsson getting into ninth in that Sauber?
I had no idea Ericsson was in the points until basically the penultimate lap, where I looked at the standings and I realized he was about to score. I saw an interview with him after the race and he seemed very emotional about it. He says something along the lines of how tough the last few years have been. And for all the criticism he gets, I will congratulate him on that. I know we joke about him on this podcast, being in the sea and whatever, but that was by far the best drive he's ever had. Hopefully for his sake, it's not a one-off and it's a bit more consistent.
Well, and he has a very well-regarded teammate too, doesn't he? So it's not like he's got a no-hoper next to him. And he seemed to outperform Leclerc this weekend.
He had, strategically, he had the perfect race. And let's not forget that we have Ruth Buscombe, formerly of Haas and reputedly responsible for their bursting onto the scene with points due to her clever pit stop calling in their very first race in Australia, now working regularly for Sauber. And that cracked a 50-race streak of no points for Ericsson. So it had to be incredibly emotional for him. And with Sauber getting their first points of the season, do we all know who is the only team left without points at this juncture?
I have a feeling it is a certain British team in Grove Williams, who I think I pointed this out on the WhatsApp group, and I don't think Brad could believe it, but they qualified 1.7 seconds slower than their fastest lap in qualifying last year, which was done by Massa. Lance Stroll qualified, like, I think, 4 tenths slower than his qualifying time last year. Let's keep in mind that they've had a year of development and the tyres are softer. They really are absolutely nowhere. And I saw another interview of Lance Stroll where he kept saying, I need to stop being so aggressive behind the wheel. And I don't see any light for them, especially given that they're not known for producing aerodynamically strong cars. I think I can genuinely see them being right at the back. I think Kubica is probably quite happy that he's not in that seat.
We're told this is a formula that's dominated by engines. And this is a team that has the best engine, and they are hopelessly slow. I think it's unforgivable to produce a car that 1 year on is any slower than the previous year, not just, you know, not just even equal, but significantly slower. How is that even possible? They develop through the year, have the whole winter and produce a brand new car, have all the testing and the first race. I mean, I guess we can talk about the drivers, but even the same driver was slower than the last year. I think it's, I know the car, someone mentioned the car is tricky to set up and, you know, it's got development potential to unlock, but it's extremely poor to be slower than the previous year.
I know we're running long, but I know the final thing Spanners wanted us to talk about was just whose championship is it after this race? I think as long as Pirelli keep bringing a very good qualifying tire that is not a good race tire, I think Ferrari have a real shot. So I'm gonna say Ferrari, and that's my final word of the podcast.
Goldie.
Ferrari clearly have got a shot this year. Spanners, Merck are not out of the woods, mate. Two wins to Vettel. We're only two races in. 19 to go. It could be anybody's. Who knows?
Bradley, even McLaren could win, right?
Yeah, so I might have been, you know, deliberately over-optimistic about McLaren. And I would still really like to see them come good. I'm interested to watch their development through the season because they seem to be quite good at making the car better as the season goes on, unlike Williams. But in terms of whose championship it is, I still think it's Mercedes. I still think they ultimately have the stronger car. I think right now, if we hadn't had the problem, or if Mercedes hadn't basically thrown it away at Melbourne, we'd be here with a Hamilton win and a Vettel win. And I think as the season goes on, we're going to find that, like last year, Mercedes on balance over the season are stronger.
I agree with you. These, I think, are two of the weaker races for Mercedes, and they're not that far off. Hamilton, I didn't think anything more than P5, because you would have had Raikkonen and Ricciardo, and I'm not convinced he would have gotten by either of them had they stayed in the race. And with Verstappen ahead of him, it would have been even more challenging. He could have been looking at a P6. He walked away with a P3. It's still his championship to lose, but Mercedes need to do their homework.
You know, the great thing, we don't know. And we don't even know when Red Bull get their act together, how much they're going to influence it. So sticking with my previous theme, I think we're going to have a good year.
Unpredictable is everything. Let's go visit the podium, gentlemen. All right, presumably, Bradley, you have a thing of the weekend, and there were many delectable choices to be made. What did you settle on?
Thanks for letting me go first, because it makes it much easier. My thing of the weekend is Gasly. I never would have expected the Honda to get to the end and be fast enough to get him up to fourth place, albeit obviously with the Red Bull issues and Raikkonen's problem. He was in a class of his own among the midfielders, I think, today. So Gasly's my thing of the weekend.
I'm going to go with Brad on this one. Pierre Gasly, what a mature performance. Eighth race in, 22, and he goes and gets fourth. I think, I can't remember what was the best result from Toro Rosso last season, but I think he probably beat that by a country mile, so to speak.
Right, well, I can't say Gasly, so I'm going to say that my thing of the weekend was Alonso finishing up his fourth in the Drivers' Championship, and McLaren a third. I don't think that's going to happen again. So
I didn't know that.
I'm going to say that. the lead Renault team.
Yep, McLaren, third in the Constructors after the double failure by Red Bull. Otherwise, they would have been fourth.
So hang on, do I actually get to be smug? I told you.
Yes, you did tell us. They are there with a shot at a podium in the Constructors' Championship, Brad. Well done. I cannot believe that none of you picked Vettel. He actually won the race. He managed his tires, and he held off Bottas, admittedly feeble-looking challenge, at the end. But it was really, really the kind of drive he is going to need every time that opportunity happens if he's going to stay with Hamilton, I think, for the bulk of the season. So I would give it to that. All right, from the best, we go to the worst. Was there a pony today for you, Anil?
Come back to me. Can't think of one off the top of my head.
Oh, good lord.
Oh, yeah, I can. Yeah, Williams, done. Williams.
All right, Goldie, you're next.
Red Bull for Ricardo's electrical issues.
Pony Award.
Yeah, Pony Award.
These are the complaints. The whiners, the winners.
No, Ferrari. Reason being, they've just been fined $50,000 by the FIA for the unsafe release, as well as...
Goldschmidt doesn't understand the Pony Award, so don't worry. Neither did I.
Done it in a while, Brad.
Okay, it's fine. I think it's where someone whinges about something.
Yes, that's what the Pony Award is.
Daddy, I want a pony.
Sorry, I don't. I lack the temper.
I haven't done this for guys.
So don't worry. So I'm like a loyal listener, and I'm like flat out on Missed Apex every time I drive to work. So I have a Pony Award for you. In fact, I'll give you one that you can use, Goldschmidt. Anil, you're on your own. Magnussen. Whinging about Grosjean not letting him through. I think it was Grosjean's fault, but Magnussen did go off on one, didn't he? And as a driver, although it's difficult to always keep your head in the heat of the moment, I think it's positive if you don't just swear at your team and have a go at them when that kind of thing happens. Everyone knows there was some kind of mistake there. You'd be better off just kind of being a bit more mature about it and saying, guys, that wasn't ideal. And then they'll respect you a bit more for it. But the one for you, sorry, Goldschmidt, I said I'd give you one. Hamilton constantly complaining through the race on his radio.
Yes.
Crofty complaining about blue flags. I don't want to hear it again. So he's the biggest pony, and he always will be.
Well, my pony of the week goes to Toto Wolff, who in a pre-race interview... Apologies for the police sounds outside my window. In a pre-race interview, simultaneously managed to complain about not wanting to pay for changes to the cars to improve overtaking, and then immediately turn around and complain about an actual cost cap that would keep their expenses down. And I thought that was just the kind of brilliant ponying that needs to be put out to the world at large. And then finally, we have, and I think this is the one you're talking about, the Missed the Apex Award. So, Goldie, who for you completely missed the apex this weekend?
Well, I'm going to go with Ferrari with what happened in the pit stop with Raikkonen. But then I'll also give it to Red Bull for their electrical failures for both Verstappen in qualifying and also in the race with Ricciardo.
You can't take two, Goldie.
You only get one. Is it Ferrari or is it Red Bull?
I'm going to give it to Ferrari because, as I said, they've just been fined $50,000 by the FIA for the unsafe release with Raikkonen.
There you go, Brad.
Okay, I'm going to give it to Bottas for not making that move stick on the last lap. He had to go for that. That was career defining.
Painful. We know Anil is next then.
Even if it ended in a crash, I have to point this out because people will say to me, oh, but you know, he might have crashed. I don't care. I think people would have given him more credit for trying.
Ooh, instant,
and it wouldn't have been a crash.
Instant conspiracy. Had they crashed, Hamilton would have won.
Yeah, so it wouldn't have even all been bad. His team wouldn't even have been annoyed at him. It would have helped his team.
All right.
Crashed.
Anil.
Yeah, I also got my awards mixed up. This one's Williams. Like, just the most embarrassing display I've ever seen from them since I can recall. Just terribly, terribly bad.
And in fact, we could have technically given the Pony Award to Stroll because he had a real bash at Williams after the first two practices in his interview. I don't know. For me, who missed the apex? I have to say McLaren qualifying. Just ouch. Did not look good for them. And frankly, they saved it with their race performance, but with Toro Rosso finishing so far up the grid, it just, ouch. So I'm going to give it to McLaren because I feel like they've lucked in their position thus far, and there are deeper problems that they need to solve within their organization. And just don't get me wrong, I want them to do well, but right now, every time I look at them, it just gives me that same feeling you get when you see someone walk right up to the edge of a cliff. And you're like, you could just take a step back, please, maybe, possibly. That's how I feel right now. And I hope they get their act together. Gentlemen, thank you so much for sticking around for so long. Anil, where can we find you? What are you up to?
You can find me on Twitter at AnilP228, on Instagram at AnilPalmer90. I talk about all things Formula One. I like cat gifs. I like Simpsons, and I like whiskey. So give me a follow.
Goldie, where can we find you? And hey, you've got some new gigs going on. Tell the world about them.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Alex_G1977. And I know Spanners hates underscores in Twitter names. He berates Rainbow Sparkle Stevens about that. Got quite a lot of commentating going on this week. I've just recently started working at a local volunteer FM radio station, Colne Radio. So I'm their bloke for motoring and motorsport, which hits the airwaves at 4 till 6 every Friday afternoon UK time. Appropriately titled Hitting the Asphalt, and which can actually be listened to on Mixcloud because every episode is downloaded. I'm also in just under 2 weeks heading over to a very specific karting track to make my European commentary debut. Spanners is taking my place at Daytona D-Max at Rye House in 2 weeks, but I'll be over in Genk in Belgium to commentate on the opening round of the 2018 Rotax Max Euro Trophy on their live stream. So, yeah, first European gig for me. Looking forward to it.
And Bradley, do tell us what you're up to and where we can find you on the Twitters.
Okay, so I'm up to racing in the VLN series, which is the Nürburgring's Endurance Championship, still for the Net Motorsport Peugeot team. I actually should have been racing this weekend, but I'm obviously here with you guys, and I spent the weekend on my sofa watching motorsport because our car is still being repaired after an unfortunate round one incident a couple of weeks ago, which wasn't anyone's fault other than a part which failed. So I'll be racing from June onwards, and we've still got another 7 rounds. We can actually win the championship still because of 2 drop rounds. And you can find me on Twitter. My handle's at Bradley Philpott. That's easy, isn't it? And on Facebook, you can search for Bradley Philpott Motorsport. Please follow me. I need followers. I don't have very many. Oh, YouTube, at BradDude2K. That one was from when I was a teenager.
As for me, I'm at MattPT55 on the Twitters. You can also follow at SpannersReady and, of course, at MissedApexF1, all on the Twitters. Please do talk to us. We really do care about everything you say, we promise. And remember, chicks dig heels, wounds cause scars, and glory is a fungible concept under certain philosophical precepts. This has been Missed Apex Podcast. And now is the time I'm going to ask, was anyone actually paying attention to the chat room and keeping track of comment of the week?
Once it became clear that there were some issues with the lagging on the live stream, I turned it off to prevent any further lagging. So I don't have any comments. I don't have any positive comments that I saw on there to tell you.
All right. You, Anil, I'm going to guess you didn't either.
I did not. I was minimizing as much internet as I could. I was focusing it all so you could hear me, Matt.
And Goldie, you didn't even know exactly what the Pony Award was, so I'm not even going to ask you. Thank goodness, despite having to run the show from an inadequate computer, deal with Spanner's horrible internet connection, and
plus also the amount of WhatsApp he's been sending
he can make himself feel better by sending those messages all day long. Despite all of that, I do have a comment of the week, and originally I was going to award it to Sandra Reynolds for her comment that the pit crew will now be surrounded by a halo when we were discussing the FIA situation. But in fact, the winner is, and congratulations, feel free to add it to your Twitter bio, Nurepian, for his comment, "Strangely, Grosjean is not petulant in French interviews. He's very different."
Comment of the week.
And the magic of... Gentlemen, thank you so very much. I appreciate it.
Can we start talking as if we're not still being recorded anymore?
1 second. I'm going to say goodbye to probably the 0 people left.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.